Thamco. Oh, another former client. I don't know. Are there any other affidavits?
There's something here about Gene Ingram didn't
sound like guilty. Oh, Gene Ingram. All right. He was removed from the LAPD for all the things I told you about before. There was a criminal case brought against him on one or two of the three or four charges that he was removed from the force on. Proving criminal cases, as you may now understand, is an extremely difficult thing. It's my understanding that the government felt that they did not have enough evidence to convict him. So the charges were either dismissed or he was found not guilty. No, the charges were dismissed for insufficient evidence. I think that's what occurred. However, okay, it's my understanding that notwithstanding what that says, that it was a dismissal. But it might have been a not guilty on one of the charges and dismissals on the others. And I'd have to check that. But the point in my statement is, which is absolutely accurate, is that he was removed from the LAPD for pimping, pandering, running a house of prostitution, and aiding narcotics dealers. That's the facts. I've got the documents. I've got the news articles. And anyone can see them. Now, it's definitely possible I think the fact that the government felt there was enough evidence to get an indictment speaks for itself. The fact that he was removed from the force for those charges does not mean that he didn't do any of those things. In fact, it means just the opposite, that there is evidence that he did. Whether there was enough evidence to convict him in a criminal court is a different issue. But my statement that I've said numerous occasions is absolutely accurate. And Eugene Ingram's personality speaks for itself. FAMCO. Oh, all right. The international conspiracy. The Van Schaik suit is brought in 1979. It gets a great deal of publicity. Oh, on that issue, I noticed Eddie said something to me about only one person brought suit. I think I told you before that only one person needs to bring one or two people, depending on the state, need to bring a class action suit. Because the procedural mechanism for a class action suit is you only have to name in the pleading one or two people, and then the class gets identified, which is what the pledge says, by the court. So in terms of bringing the suit, that's all you need. Now, my phone rings off the hook. I mean, literally, within 6 months, 1,000 telephone calls. I mean, it was shocking to me, who had never been around the subject. Parents, children, relatives, Paulette Coopers, Maurice Girodius, Robert Kaufman, victims a mile long, all over the place, families, ex-members, call me. My office, and you know, there's 2 secretaries. I mean, picture my office, as people know. I mean, 2 secretaries, 2 or 3 lawyers. Ben's been there, he knows, against this monolith with the hundreds of millions of dollars, the Church of Scientology. And I invite you all to come to my office to see this FAMCO conspiracy. I'm inundated with phone calls. And, you know, I've got the Guardian's office documents that have been released by the federal government. And as I've said in many speeches, I'm appalled by this thing. And I'm hearing these, you know, George Meister, Susan Meister's father calls me. Other kids who've committed suicide. Kids who have been institutionalized, people who have been ripped off, people who have disconnected, ex-members who have had their auditing information. It's an endless litany. It would take me all night to begin to describe to you. So, I then tell my co-counsel, what we got to do is we got to develop some plan to get lawyers to deal with all these people. So I start calling lawyers. And as people like Homer knows, or Bent know, getting a lawyer to represent you against this organization is a very difficult thing because they do to them what they do to me. And the more aggressive and assertive and vigorous or confronting you are, then the more they attack. So to get good quality lawyers who are going to stand up to them is a very, very difficult thing to accomplish. So we go around to these lawyers and we try to get them involved and we succeed in getting lawyers. At a huge cost, we get people like Connors and Bunch and Julia, and at a huge cost to ourselves. And bringing up to July 1981, between early 1980 and 1981, I mean, all hell was breaking loose. They're suing me all over the United States, and I'm going to get into the lawsuit, too, which, for the record now, is 13 lawsuits against me personally, 3 contempt actions, which is 16 lawsuits, and 3 against other members of my firm for a total of 19. And I can give you the docket numbers, the cases, etc. The reason I said 13 to 17 in the speech is because when I was speaking, I had in mind that lawsuits can be the lawsuits that were brought, and it can also be the contempt actions, which is a legal proceeding, in these cases, criminal contempt actions, that you have to defend. So rather than explain to everyone what lawsuits meant, I said 13 to 17, and I believe there were 3 dots or something in one of those things, and I believe I said, in other members of my firm, which I think they deleted. So if you go back and check the videotape, I believe I said that. But in any event, they're right about one thing, I was wrong, it's 19. And it's 13 against me personally and 3 contempts for a total of 16. Now, where was I for that digression? Oh, FAMCO, back to FAMCO. So, right, so I'm calling these lawyers, and we get some lawyers involved, and the church, because they're then stealing from my office premises some 22,000 documents. How do I know it's 22,000? That's what they stood up in court later on after the whole thing was uncovered, that they took. Boxes of documents, attorney-client letters to all my clients all over Massachusetts who I represented with nothing to Scientology, to do with Scientology. And I'll give you an example. Andrea Wagner, stealing my correspondence to her. She's a person dying of mesothelioma, which is asbestos-related. So there's an asbestos-related lawsuit in connection. Andrea is then 31 years old or so and has 2 children, and she's dying of this disease. The church finds out from stealing my documents that she's my client and begins calling her on the telephone. She sends me a letter begging me to have them stop calling because she can't handle it. She dies like 4 or 5 months later. Those are the types of things they're stealing. Those are the types of things they're doing. And that's just one client. And I'm living with this now. Well, pick it up in... Van Schaik came to me in July 1979, late June, early July 1979. The GO starts. I send one letter saying, give her her money back. They say no. I sent a second letter saying, I'm going to bring a lawsuit against you if you don't. And the next thing I know, I got all my clients, relatives, friends calling me on the phone saying they heard I'm going to be disbarred and I'm being investigated. The typical GO stuff. And at this point, all I've done is send 2 letters saying, give this girl her money back. And I don't even know about the church. But that led me to try to find out. So, all these people calling my office. I'm trying to get lawyers. In early January 1981, we're going to bring the Paulette Cooper suit in Boston for the theft of the documents from the psychiatrist's office. I get a phone call from a lawyer in California who says they want to negotiate a settlement of all the cases. This is in January 1981. And the facts become very critical here because they distort so many things. So I have a legal obligation, as every lawyer knows. I have to convey any settlement offers, any settlement negotiation postures to my clients. So I call my clients and I say, church wants to negotiate a settlement. See, they don't want the Paulette Cooper case brought about the theft of the doctor's psychiatric records. So I fly to California and to sit in on negotiations for my then clients. And the number of lawsuits at that point, let's see, there's Van Schaik, and then the next one is, then they sue me 3 times next. I bring Van Schaik, I get sued, or members of my firm get sued, because first, they sued Hoffman, a co-counsel. That got thrown out. And my brother Kevin and Van Schaik, and they sued Eddie. And they sued Eddie in the federal court in in Las Vegas on January, first week in January 1980, approximately 3 weeks after the Van Schaick suit is filed. That suit gets thrown out almost immediately, but I have to hire a lawyer in Vegas, big motion to dismiss. Cost me, you know, a lot of money. Then they bring a state court action in Nevada within another month against Kevin. I don't know whether you were in that one or not, Eddie, against Hoffman. Eddie was in that one, too. That one gets thrown out. Then they bring immediately a third suit against me in Nevada. That one immediately gets thrown out. And I've brought this one lawsuit at this point. So then, then they bring a fourth lawsuit in Boston against me for the following things. Four people named Lucy Garitano, Stephen Garitano, Gervais, and Graves leave the Boston church and take their auditing files with them. Lucy, in fact, had done some gas work for the GO and had culled files, used it for blackmail, et cetera, and given, so she knew that the GO did it. One of these other four knew they did it, so they took their auditing files and either destroyed them or brought them to my office. Church immediately sued me. And I'd say we're talking now February, March 1980, say 3 months or so after the Van Schaick suit is brought. So these four people walk into my office off the street begging for protection, saying they read about the Van Schaick suit, they know these things go on, we brought our auditing files with her, some of them are huge, you know, and this high. And here they are, and you protect us. The next thing that occurs is they sue me because on the grounds that I've taken the auditing files and have possession of them. And I'm in a big conspiracy to steal auditing files. I mean, I didn't know these people until they walked in my door, except maybe they called me an hour or two or a day beforehand. So they bring the files, and I get sued. So that's the second suit after the first Nevada suit. Now, back to FAMCO. So all these things are occurring, and all these people are coming in, and they want to negotiate. I fly to California to negotiate. We prepare settlement discussions or positions for the negotiations that relate to the following: the value of the various cases based on punitive damages, compensatory damages, et cetera, et cetera. The church steals those. They have possession of them probably a day or two after they're created, unbeknownst to me at the time, because I don't find out till 9 months later that for a year, or almost 2 years, they've been stealing all these documents. In 1981, we were in a proceeding in the Federal District Court, and a document came out that appeared to be from my file. I then asked the judge to question this individual about this document. Let me get my dates straight here, so make sure this is an exact sequence. The church then realizes that I am on to the fact that I know they're stealing my documents, okay, in the way they're doing it. Oh, and there's been a defection, too. Someone has defected and told me that he didn't know all the details. He was not GO. He just knew that things were coming down lines about contents of my typewriter ribbons. I think that's what it was. That my typewriter ribbons were being taken and then read, put on the screen and read back. Now, the church then, I know exactly what it was in reference to now. In July 1981, 7 months after the negotiations, which I have to get back to, the Church of the City of Clearwater has contacted me and asked me to represent them in preparing a report about what the church is doing in Clearwater. Within a matter of weeks, the church is distributing on the streets of Clearwater, in July 1981, the payment of a check to me that, and they have there's a copy of the, or something of the check that could only have occurred, I remember we put two and two together at the time, could only have occurred by them getting documents from my office. Then there was a series of hearings that related to the documents, and the details of which I'm not sure, but the church knows I'm onto them. Then, whenever they know that something is about to go down against them, they immediately go on the offensive, and they say, you know, you did this when in fact they're doing it. So the next thing they do is they file, but there was something before that in a courtroom, but they file a bar complaint against me based on FAMCO, saying that I'm selling shares of stock and financing litigation, which has since been thrown out. I mean, because there's no share of stock, there was none ever offered, and it's ridiculous, which I'm going to get into. But in any event, so now we know, oh, they attached some documents to the bar complaint. Maybe 100 documents they attached to the bar complaint. I then immediately go over to the federal court and file a motion for them to produce all documents taken from my office premises. They first say that there's only, and this is on the record, there's only, and the guy stands up in court and says, it's only about an inch thick. We only have about an inch thick of documents, some 600 to 800 documents max. A month later, another legal proceeding. There's been a various discovery by us to find out how much they've got. The inch thick turns, which this fellow has just stated, a month before that in open court, one of the fellows who stole it all, a fellow named Kevin Tai. We now find out that the pile's as high as the ceiling from an inch thick, that they've been stealing for 2 years. All these extremely confidential attorney-client things. So that answers your question how we found out. It was between July and September 1981 under those circumstances. All right. Some of them were, some of them weren't. My garbage bin. My office. Yeah, my office is in a private condominium compound, or was at the time, it's not now, with 10-foot-high gates all around, a security guard at the front 24 hours a day, no trespassing signs posted. So it's a violation of the criminal law to go onto the premises for purposes of at least stealing documents. And there's so many facts that we subsequently uncovered, it's going to be hard for me to put them all together, but essentially it's this. They did steal documents from one of those big trash containers, dumpster. One time, it turns out, and they used all kinds of covers and guises, one time a security guard caught Kevin Tai at like 2:30 in the morning because he was going by the dumpster and a beeper went off, and he heard a beeper in the dumpster. So they obviously had another guy watching the dumpster, saw the security guard coming, and alerted him with the beeper. So, in any event, that covers part of that. But many of the documents, of the thousands of documents, some are right out of my office files. My view, we don't know, Homer, possibly. My view is that they use the dumpster as a cover, which they do all the time if you really get into the GO things, which we'll, if we have time, we'll get into. But in any event. Now, we got to go back to January because we prepare these things. They've stolen all those when they're prepared. The negotiating sessions basically break down. They offer some money. I subsequently learned that Mary Sue Hubbard approves an offer of $1.6 million to pay off and settle the cases with, I don't say 10 or 12 clients. And at this point, in all candor, I mean, I am worn out with this stuff. I mean, for a year and a half, they have sued me all over the place. They're doing all these things. And, you know, I'm just not used to this stuff. So, you know, I'm telling my clients, yeah, you know, take it. Let's, you know, I want to get rid of it. And now, before that, you got to go, that actually takes place in July where they offer the $1.6 million, late June, early July. There's correspondence to that effect, which I can give you, et cetera. We got to go back to May 1981. Because during this period of time is when I'm trying to put all these lawyers together. So the next set of documents which become critical to the FAMCO issue, and some of this may be so involved to you people that you won't understand it, but these are the facts, involves the preparation for this lawyers' conference and the documents we prepare for the lawyers' conference. Now, this is of real importance. They infiltrate the lawyers' conference with a guy named Ford Schwartz, who has given me an affidavit on this, who some of you may know. Schwartz is working for the GO. Schwartz has, he was clever the way he did this, because most people that they tried to get to become my clients, such as Bill Broderick, who recently given me an affidavit, who was codenamed Oscar, you know, we could pick out right away. One of the lawyers we'd already lined up was a Washington lawyer, and Ford Schwartz went to the Washington lawyer and became the Washington lawyer's client. Almost, I guess I could say almost unbeknownst to me, because I was just like peripherally related, because these thousands of people are calling and I'm sending them out. And so Schwartz becomes, and the lawyer attends the conference. And Schwartz attends, and he's the only client who attends this lawyer's conference, which, you know, perfectly ethical, it's perfectly appropriate to get lawyers together and meet and talk about what you're going to do, et cetera, et cetera. Schwartz attends it, and I think tape records parts of it, which become real important for the following reasons. The GO knows right then what the arrangement is among the lawyers. Because this is the big conference where all the lawyers are going to get involved, are going to make their various arrangements, and who's going to do what, and who's going to get paid, and how it's going to be done, etc. So the lawyers know, and as they've testified, because they've all been deposed around in the various cases around the country, that FAMCO has nothing to do. In fact, to digress just very briefly, FAMCO was a corporation chartered in 78, 79 for my brother Kevin Flynn, who was involved in financial consulting, for my brother George Flynn, who was a real engineer, a real physicist, and who works in, he had a very good job in a large company in Massachusetts, and he was going to leave and form his own company in connection with some aspects of computers which are beyond my realm. And Flynn Associates Management Company was chartered then, before I was ever involved in Scientology, to be the management company for this other engineering firm for my brother George. My brother George's corporation did not get off the ground. Both corporations to this day have just sat dormant. In other words, they never did anything. Because lawyers form corporations, and sometimes you go into business and sometimes you don't. Those businesses did nothing. Now, May 1981, we have the lawyers, and we make the traditional arrangements that all lawyers make. There's nothing unethical, there's nothing illegal, got nothing to do with FAMCO of any nature or description. Ford Schwartz is there. The GO knows at the time everything that is occurring while it's occurring, and they know that FAMCO's got nothing to do with it. Subsequently, in July 1981, when the city of Clearwater contacts me, and the negotiations are terminated, they offer some money, a number of things occur, they break down. My brother Kevin Flynn then comes to me, and he says, look, And by the time, by this time, we're, you know, we've been beleaguered, besieged by these people for a year and a half, right? And he comes to me and says, you know, we spent all this money. It looks like the litigation is just beginning. Why don't we do what a lot of people do? Why don't we form a corporation, and we can even use this one we formed years ago. You can no longer afford to pay me. I'll become an investigator for all these lawyers and a researcher, and a consultant for all these lawyers, and I'll go out and do everything I've been doing for the last year and a half, collecting GO docs, blah, 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 everything a paralegal does, and I'll work for all these lawyers on a consulting basis, and I'll form a publicly held corporation, and the publicly held corporation, just like Pinkerton's, can then hire out and consult with all these lawyers. And I'll think this is exactly what goes down. And if someone gets a Bible or Dianetics, I'll put my hand on it. Tom Hoffman in my office researches this proposal. He comes back to me with opinions saying it's ethical. There's nothing wrong with it. It's done all over the country. You can do it. I say, no, we're not going to do it for the following reason. We stand for something in this litigation. If we go out and do this, even though it's perfectly appropriate and it's probably sound financially, and we probably should do it for financial reasons, it'll change the character of what we're trying to accomplish. And I don't want to change the character of what I'm trying to accomplish. Because they will use it to create a, you know, this conspiracy theory. So I said no, and it was thrown in the rubbish. It was thrown in the rubbish. The church and their GO people got a hold of these documents. Now, let me tell you what they did. And for those of you, I don't know what, you don't even know what's in here, but I know what they distributed over the last 4 years about this. Because I've seen it. I, for example, saw it in the bar complaint where they put all this together. They took the 1981 settlement proposals, the 1984 lawyers' meetings, and the proposal, put them all together, and now are saying what they're saying. It's nonsense. The exact facts are what I've told you. In fact, no share of stock in Flynn Associates Management Corporation has ever been sold or offered to anyone. In fact, the proposal is perfectly ethical, perfectly appropriate, and I killed it because I did not want to change the character of the litigation. And the lawyers in my office who have testified under oath, who have been deposed, have all so testified. In fact, there is no lawyer anywhere in the United States, including the ones who represent Homer Schomer, the ones who represent many other people around the country, who have ever had anything to do with any Flynn Associates Management Corporation. Now, I think the critical thing for you to understand is the following. The GO knew January 1981 documents were. They were stealing those. They knew what the May 1981 lawyers meeting documents were. They were stealing those. They knew what the proposal was. They stole that. They knew from Ford Schwartz that nothing like this ever took place. And for 4 years, they have repeatedly, falsely, and outrageously claims that FAMCO exists and does what they claim it does in selling shares and financing lawsuits, et cetera, when they knew all along it was false, and they're currently being sued for those libels by me. And that's the story of FAMCO.